Yes. Culture and Conversations, the podcast you need to download and share with your friends. Let's go. My name is Jamison Smallwood, and I am your host of Culture and Conversations. Thank you guys for downloading, subscribing, and sharing this content on social media, making people aware of what we're doing with Culture and Conversations. I've got a great show planned, as usual. Up next on Culture and Conversations, I'm going to talk a little bit about Roseanne's show being canceled, the NFL got it wrong, and a little bit of hip-hop rap beef, Pusha T versus Drake. And we've got a great guest, right? I almost forgot. Brandon Butler of PixelDust.co stops by to share his experiences becoming an entrepreneur and starting this new venture to help people get the most out of their WordPress and Foursquare powered websites. Up next on Culture and Conversations. Let's go. Yes, this is Culture and Conversations. I'm your host, Jamison Smallwood, and I thank you guys for being a part of the conversation. Yes, we have a great show planned for you guys to listen to and to partake in. But first, I'm going to give you a little bit of my take on what's been going on in the culture. So most recently, the NFL, the National Football League, made a decision somewhat unilaterally to basically forbid any type of anthem protest. For those people who don't know, which would be rare, Colin Kaepernick decided that he was going to take a knee to draw attention to police brutality during the national anthem. So he would get down on one knee and use that as an opportunity to draw attention to the national anthem protest that he had going on, where he wanted to highlight police brutality. So he wasn't protesting the actual anthem. He wasn't protesting the actual country. He was just simply drawing attention by sitting down and then subsequently taking a knee to his particular feelings about police brutality, unjust shootings and killings by police officers in this country. And once this obviously became news and became known, people quickly responded to politicize it and to spin it to make it seem as if he was actually, in fact, protesting troops and the military and the country itself, when in fact he wasn't. He simply was trying to get people to pay attention through the platform and the medium of the NFL to the issues that he felt were near and dear to his heart. And that was, you know, the shootings and killings by police officers of unarmed black men. Now, going forward into the timeline of what the NFL had to deal with, the NFL basically, for people who don't know, they signed a contract with the government to use the platform that the NFL has as a medium for the military to advertise, you know, their different branches of service to the audience that watches the NFL. So all of these spectacles of patriotism that you see, they're not organic. They're not just something that the NFL decided to do. They're actually paid advertisements placed conspicuously at the start of these games by the military, which that's a whole nother conversation altogether, but I don't have a problem with that. However, to act and pretend like it's this big issue of patriotism that's being offended by Colin Kaepernick and other players who want to take a knee to draw attention to various protests, it's just complete crap. And rather than be honest and transparent about these things, they've become politicized. And in part because President Trump has decided to take on the mantle and try to paint it as if it is a protest against the very foundation of this country, which that's just completely not true. So it's just amazing how the NFL totally missed this and is tone deaf to what's going on in the country. And rather than dialogue with the players and come up with a way of using its billions of dollars worth of revenue to try and bring awareness to police and citizen relationships in this country, it simply is going to pretend as if the problem doesn't exist by mandating that the players be restricted from protesting. But that's the thing about protests. protests are difficult and hard because, and they often don't come without consequence. And if they were permitted, then they really wouldn't be protests, would they? They would just be people doing what people allow them to do. So if players feel strongly enough, if players want to draw attention to political issues, then I support them doing that at the expense of whatever it takes in terms of their livelihood to do so. I just hope that with those types of convictions, the people who have similar convictions will find ways to help financially support those men who decide to take on the mantle of protest and draw attention to these various issues. It's just amazing how the NFL can be composed of so many black people and black players and have a legacy of black players and yet be completely irreverent to the issue that Colin Kaepernick and other players have raised simply by taking a knee or sitting down during the national anthem. So hopefully the NFL gets it right. You know, I like football. I like watching football. But at the same time, I need people to be accountable and industries to be accountable for these types of issues. And, you know, they could have just been indifferent towards it. They could have said players are allowed to do whatever they want to do during the pregame. They're not affecting the product on the field. And we don't necessarily hold the view of these players, but we support their right as American citizens to use their voice in ways that they feel to bring political awareness to different issues. So we'll see how this all plays out and what repercussions come from it. But I, for one, have lost a lot of appreciation for the NFL because it's clear that they are tone deaf to what's going on in this country. Now, with talking about being tone deaf, no pun intended, Roseanne Barr, you know, decided that she was going to go on Twitter and write a bunch of racist comments. And for people who don't know, you know, I'm an African-American guy. I'm a black guy. And I always tell people, this isn't a black podcast. It's just a podcast about a black guy. So I speak from a certain cultural frame, but I don't try and speak to just black people. I try to speak to everyone. And I feel like as a member of humanity, I can do that because I'm a person first. I'm a human first before I'm a black person or a black human, right? And when Roseanne, you know, made these comments, basically alluding to calling one of President Obama's advisors or cabinet members, she basically called the woman a monkey. I want people to really connect with that. The lack of human decency that statement not only imputes to the target of who's being affected by that statement, but just what it takes in your heart to look at someone and try to call someone else a monkey, especially a black person. And, you know, I'm not going to try to play coy with anybody, especially not on my podcast. You know, when white people say those types of things, they know that it's racial language. They know that it's coded because during slavery and when, you know, Eurocentric countries colonized Africa, they saw the tribes people in Africa, the citizens of Africa, as considered them monkeys, subhuman. And we know it's an insult, especially to the humanity of a person, because one of the major issues people had with the theory of evolution is that it implied that we descended from monkeys as human beings. So for someone to call another human being a monkey, it fundamentally denies their personhood. And it also is racial language because that's a common insult that has been used for centuries by white people who want to insult black people and to impugn black people. And, you know, for Roseanne to be an actress and have a show that was, you know, so popular, where the show, one of the fundamental pillars of the show was that Roseanne was a supporter of Donald Trump, it's repugnant. And I have to denounce it and I have to speak to it. The thing that bothers me the most about, you know, Roseanne and people like Roseanne who are Trump supporters is that they have no problem standing so close to racial rhetoric that is fundamentally bigoted, racist, and denies people their basic human decency. You know, I always tell people, you know, you have to be careful about the company that you keep. You know, I'm not calling anybody a racist, but when you hang out with the racist, then that makes me wonder what type of person are you. When you are espousing things that racist people espouse, what type of person are you? And one of the things that I just can't tolerate is people not being treated as human beings. And that's fundamental to not only my faith as a Christian, that teaches me that we're all made in God's image, that we're all image bearers of God, and that that goes across all of humanity, regardless of race, nationality, sexuality, spirituality. It all goes across all of those spectrums. And for someone like Roseanne, who has so much privilege, who has so much opportunity afforded to her by wealth in this great country that we live in, to get on her platform and use it as a means of insulting, you know, millions of people and billions of people truly across the world by referring to a black person or a person of who has commonality with black people in terms of their ethnicity as a monkey, then it's just repugnant. What time are we living in? So, you know, I always challenge people. I don't talk a lot of politics on my podcast, but I try to speak from my perspective about the things that happen. And it's not a situation that I want to dwell on, but it just is a constant reminder that even in 2018, when people are under the notion that when slavery ended and when we were freed from slavery as African Americans, that we magically had all the issues in our society fixed and laid waste for us, that all we have to do now is just constantly live, they're just completely delusional. Roseanne isn't unique. She's another powerful person in a position to avoid, to exercise her racist beliefs. And this is a constant struggle and constant battle for people of color, African Americans, I should say, specifically in this country. Now, hopefully a little bit lighter commentary is that I have thoroughly enjoyed listening to Drake and Pusha T go at each other in hip hop beef. Hip hop beef is, or rap beef is, you know, where basically two people have issue with each other and they insult each other cleverly over raps and beats on hip hop tracks. And, you know, it's cool as long as obviously it doesn't go past the point of name calling on records and turns into, you know, it doesn't turn into something physical or even worse, violent, you know, in the real world, quote unquote, like what happened with Tupac Shakur and Biggie Smalls, the rappers, right? So, you know, these are things that we have to keep in mind when you talk about beef. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want it to go that way. I just want it to be two good people who can rap, two great MCs going at each other and giving us quality music as a result of their rivalry with each other. So I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying, you know, Pusha T's response to Drake's, Duppy freestyle. And I'm up here, you know, listening to, Pusha T respond to some of the things that Drake said. So for people who want to know more about that whole beef, I don't have a lot of details that, you know, that go that deep on it. But one of the things is that these are two of the best rappers currently out. And if you enjoy hip hop music and you enjoy rap, then you're going to enjoy them trading off bars and songs against each other, dissing each other. So more to come, I'm sure, because at this time it seems like Drake is actually up against someone who has the talent to compete with him at that level. So this should be very interesting. And finally, I had a chance to sit down with a recent friend that I had a chance and opportunity to meet thanks to social media and some of my other friends who know this gentleman. I had a chance to sit down with Brandon Butler of pixeldust.co, and Brandon decided to share with me his experiences of growing up and developing an entrepreneurial perspective and being an entrepreneur. And this conversation is of interest to me, and I hope of interest to you, because Brandon is sharing his experience of going literally from no business to having started several businesses and had, you know, various levels of success with those businesses. And we talk about the mindset behind entrepreneurship, and I share kind of my perspective as I interview Brandon and talk with him about his perspective. And I believe it's a great conversation for people who are looking to start businesses and looking to, do something entrepreneurial and to, try and actually create a stream of income for themselves in addition to their day job. So Brandon brings that great perspective and also tells us about the great company PixelDust.co that gives users the ability to buy services and subscribe to purchasing support services from him and his company for their WordPress and Squarespace websites. So this is a good conversation, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Brandon's a very funny guy, and me and him sort of geek out about some things that we have in common from our childhood past. And I think you guys are going to love this conversation up next on Culture and Conversations. So there are people that you meet in your life, and they seem to be somewhat kindred spirits. They're always into different entrepreneurial opportunities. They're always seeking to grow and advance themselves. And then you discover that they have a bit of a motivational speaker inside of them as well. And Brandon Butler, my friend that I've got on Culture and Conversations right now, he is one of those type of people. And Brandon is always challenging me through his post on Facebook to think about how I can better myself from an entrepreneurial standpoint, how I can take advantage of different opportunities to hustle, different opportunities to create side businesses for myself. And I saw a venture that Brandon posted about on his timeline that I wanted to bring Brandon on Culture and Conversations to speak about. So, Brandon, welcome to Culture and Conversations, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I'm doing great. I appreciate you for having me on. I really appreciate the invite.
Hey, man. No problem, man. I think Culture and Conversations is birthed in part out of some of your motivational posts that you've put on Facebook, because you're always challenging people to aspire and to try and do more than just follow the routine that everybody else has going on. And, you know, I think that's part of the sauce that helped birth Culture and Conversations.
Oh, well, thank you, man. I'm glad that it could be of help to you. I'm just someone on there spouting out sometimes. So I'm glad people find it interesting.
Well, you never know who's listening on social media. That's one of the things I find interesting, because people will come back to me after I make a post, maybe months later, and be like, oh, I saw what you posted and I really agree with that. Or they found motivation in what I said, or sometimes they get really pissed off at what I said. And that comes back to haunt me too. But either way, people do listen. And, you know, I appreciate people like yourself who post positive content that can also be empowering and enriching if you're able to execute upon it. So
absolutely, man. I get asked a lot of questions by folks, and so sometimes I just get inspired to share little bits of knowledge. So
yeah, definitely
glad people enjoy it.
Definitely. So let's kind of take it from the top, Brandon. You know, tell me a little bit about yourself. You are a Georgia Southern Eagle, like most of my guests have been. But, you know, in terms of your background, what sort of has led you into the world of being an entrepreneur? What gave you the spark to pursue entrepreneurship as a means of adding to your personal income?
I've always kind of been like that. The further I kind of look back, I mean, you know, I always tell people, I remember back in high school, kind of the height of some of my entrepreneurial days, is I had a huge candy empire. I was like the Nino Brown of selling candy, like Snickers and Twix and stuff. I mean, I think in ninth grade, I had people in like every grade selling candy for me.
Nice. Nice.
And it all came crumbling down because they saw me give somebody some candy and found my candy stash in high school. And I mean, it literally was a book bag full of like Snickers bars and Reese's and stuff. And you would have thought it was actually something bad.
You thought it was dope. You thought it was dope or cocaine.
Yeah. Oh, you would have thought it was like dope or cocaine, like the way they swarmed around me, you know, back in the day. So, you know, I've always kind of had a kind of a hustling spirit. Even at Georgia Southern, I remember doing lots of different things. I used to do little events. I threw parties like everybody else at some point.
Okay.
I used to, you know, build websites. I used to just, you know, work on different projects. So I was always kind of, you know, in the mix, you know, looking for opportunities to make some entrepreneurial cash.
Yeah. I really see you in school as this kid who is putting people to work, giving them boxes of candy, like the kilos of cocaine, and sending them out, you know, through the hallways selling your product. And then they swarm you like, you know, like you're really running a trap house or something, and acting like you got all this contraband. That's such a great story about you know, entrepreneurship and the hustler spirit, man. I feel like the Boondocks stole your life story and put that on TV in some kind of way too, man.
I wouldn't be surprised. I was going to say, the way you were describing it, I was going to think you were there. I mean, it was, you know, the more I think back on it, it's actually kind of hilarious, just, you know, thinking back on it.
Yeah.
I used to literally have two book bags coming to school. You know, one was for the candy, one was for my books and all that stuff. So it's just kind of evolved over the years, man.
Yeah, I know I've sold things in the past that I won't mention on the podcast because I don't want to incriminate myself, but I've sold things in the past that, you know, in a similar fashion, not necessarily with the empire of people selling stuff, but, you know, the hustle mindset. And let's just be thankful that I didn't get into more trouble, because the stuff I was selling, while it wasn't of a narcotic nature, it still would have probably gotten me at least a really nasty fine from somebody for doing it. So I'm just glad I didn't get caught. So,
yeah, man, we're glad you're here. Glad you're here.
That's it, man. I dodged one of those nasty statistics as a black man about getting locked up, man. I dodged that one, you know. But, you know, let's get back to, though, you're talking about your entrepreneurial mindset. You know, you were in college at Georgia Southern throwing parties and stuff, and you were coming up with, you know, websites for people, helping people develop websites. Is there something in your family life that gave you that entrepreneurial spirit? Is that just something, or is that just something you literally looked at as, why can't I make money this way? You know, just from your own personal experience.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, nobody, at least my parents, you know, they weren't really big on the whole entrepreneurial thing early on. I always, you know, seemed like kind of an oddball of the family. I mean, I was smart. I was going to go to college. I graduated high school with good grades and, you know, did well in college and all that stuff. But like, I always just had like ideas and hustles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like, even back in high school, like I said, I remember I used to install car stereos and car speakers for folks. And I could, you know, I'd have like days where, and I would get those legally, you know, but, you know, I had, I remember days where, you know, I'd have like four or five cars in my parents' driveway, like on a Saturday, like hooking up like car radios, speakers, 10, 12 amps.
Yeah.
And my dad was cool. I mean, he didn't care, you know, my parents didn't really mind, but, you know, they still wanted me to kind of, you know, go to school or whatever. So, you know, I'd say in the last, yeah, 5-7 years, they've really adopted it more than anything else, because it just wasn't something they were used to seeing. But, you know, man, also, you know, I got to tell everybody too, I also spent a lot of time growing up in Alabama early on.
Okay.
You know, on my grandma had like a small farm, and with my family, like, you know, working and doing things like that. And, you know, I just realized again early on, I got a very good introduction to like physical labor,
mm-hmm.
like manual labor,
mm-hmm.
in the other LA, lower Alabama. And, you know, I just decided that I wanted to try to do some different things.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got a father who is a carpenter by trade, and I just worked with him a lot growing up, just like in a similar way that you described your experience in lower Alabama. And my dad was making money working for himself, carrying 2x4s in the heat of the South Georgia summers. And I just did not want to do that for a living. And don't get me wrong, he always had money. He always was successful because he was an entrepreneur, and his own business was flourishing in the area for the economy that he was in. But it was the hardest work ever, and it never ended, because he always was working, because that's sort of the life that you get into when you're an entrepreneur, is that you're always seizing the moment. But I realized, to your point, that the manual labor was just not something I wanted to build my life on. So I decided to really become really dedicated to school. And also I was good at school and academics and stuff. So that's what gave me my hope in terms of how I could find a place in the economy to be able to make some money. So, you know, you bring up that story about you installing car stereos. You know, did you read Crutchfield magazine by chance?
Oh man, let me tell you, I used to, like, you just made me have a flashback, man. Like, I had the, I'm gonna go ahead and give you the hustle now. This is how I used to, like, again, you always got to kind of find the angle. So sure. The great thing about Crutchfield was they would give you the direction for any kind of car.
Yep.
Because remember, back in the day, you didn't have the internet.
No.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, you had to, like, actually get a manual to figure out how to install this stuff. Now, luckily, since, like, me and most of my friends didn't have no money, we all had, like, old, you know, cars or, like, kind of like Hondas and, like, old Hondas in the 90s and stuff. So they were kind of easy to work on the same thing. But the hustle with Crutchfield was once you bought something from them, if you called them back and said, hey, I bought a new car and I want to take my radio out and put it in this new car, they would give you the directions on how to install it in the new car.
Oh, wow.
So I basically bought, like, one stereo from Crutchfield.
And
if you call them now, I probably have, like, 800 cars. So I'd be like, yeah, so I got a Honda Accord. How do I install? Yeah, so I got a Hyundai, a Corolla.
Wow.
So, you know, you always got to find the hustle, man. Always got to find an angle.
You're right, man. I remember buying what they call their master sheets. And it was a booklet that maybe was about maybe 5 or 6 pages, but it would show you literally how to dismantle a dash to install, you're right, whatever type of head unit you wanted. And not to get too, you know, not to geek out too much with you about this, but I found a kindred spirit when you start talking about Crutchfield. They had a wiring diagram that they would provide you for each stereo in the car. So, you know, every head unit was connected to the, you know, a harness, and that harness was a factory issued harness, you know, OEM original equipment or whatever from the manufacturer. And they basically would sell you an adapter that you could use to connect your wires from your new headset to the harness, to the harness adapter, and then just plug it into the existing car.
The kit.
Yeah, exactly. You get a kit. But that's cool that you were able to find out the angle on that, because you were able to say, oh, I got this other car. And it would keep sending you more and more instructions on how to do it, because the instructions weren't terribly expensive. But if you're saying, like, hey, you ain't got no money to do this with, it's cool that you took a $10 booklet that they sell and turned it into into the instructions for doing it for, like, several different types of cars over the years, man. You know.
Yeah, once I kind of figured out how to do it early in, you know, back in the day, we used to, you know, do all that stuff to our cars and everything. Once I kind of figured it out, you know, once you get the main models down, it was pretty easy from then.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if I could do it nowadays with today's cars. I was definitely having a good time.
Yeah, man, that's cool, man. That took me back when you talked about installing those car kits, man, because there was always that person in the hood who was like the go-to for certain things. There was always a connect for everything, right? If you wanted to get into trouble in certain ways, you could go and find that connect. But if you had, like, the academic, computer, technical thing, there was a guy in the neighborhood who was like the go-to for all that stuff, you know, and you were that guy in your neighborhood. And in some ways I was a guy in mine, you know? So it's funny to hear you tell that story, because that's just a life that of people who wanted to have, you know, their cars and stuff modified that way. So you turned it into actually a hustle, helping people get that equipment installed for, I'm sure, very reasonable prices.
Oh, yeah, man. Good times back in the day. Things were a whole lot more simple then.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I'm curious now, man, just as we fast forward a little bit. So you're at Southern, and you obviously have gotten your degree and you're transitioning into the workforce. What were some of the things that sort of propelled you into more of a formal entrepreneurial mindset? Because obviously there is the hustler's mindset, which there's nothing wrong with that, but there's also the formalities around learning how to start a business, learning how to create, you know, LLCs and, you know, just really putting a formal structure to a business. What kind of gave you that background as you transition out of Southern and into the working world or whatever?
Getting screwed over. You know, okay. I mean, I could think of two very specific situations that kind of just, you know, re-solidified the importance of just doing different things to, you know, find other opportunities to make income. And I always, you know, tell these stories to even my interns and stuff. One is I remember recently when I graduated, after I graduated, maybe about a year or two, I was working. I think I had moved out for a little bit, okay. And then like moved back home for a little bit because, you know, it wasn't working out, and I was still trying to work and get some things going, just like everybody else, like mm-hmm. right out of college, you know, wondering, saying, oh, college was a waste, all that kind of mess, you know, going through that phase. I was working this job, and I remember I got laid off on like Wednesday. No, it was like Tuesday. I think my mom got laid off from her job of like 20 plus years on like Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
And my dad got laid off from his job on like Thursday.
Oh, wow.
And I remember just sitting around the table and just being like, damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? I just remembered like that moment. That was one of those moments. I was like, all right, like, yeah, this we got to get. I mean, you know, everybody bounced back and everybody's doing great. I mean, that was a while ago, you know, but, you know, I just remember that as one of the moments. And I think the other one was I had, you know, actually really gotten a job that I enjoyed. I was working at Sports Radio 790 The Zone.
Okay.
And here in Atlanta, I was the first webmaster, then got promoted to like director of digital. I was running their website, doing all kind of fun stuff. We were the flagship, like the Hawks, Braves, Falcons, all kind of stuff. And they sold the radio station.
Oh.
And they brought us all into the conference room. And I just remember, I'm not going to say who, but somebody got up and was like, you know, this is going to be a tough situation for everybody. It's going to work out for us, but it's going to be tough for everybody else. Like, I literally remember him saying that.
Wow.
To a whole group of people that had basically, I mean, you know, 790 was, you know, more or less a startup, if you want to kind of call it. I mean,
sure.
It was a small company, it was a small culture. So for you to kind of do that to a lot of the people that were there. So, you know, just seeing that and kind of going through those experiences, like, you know, that one specifically when 790 kind of started going through those changes, that was what kind of catapulted me to do the website shop, which was like one of my first real, like, entrepreneurial, okay, I'm going to go all in kind of ideas.
Okay.
And we had a couple of stores. We did a web design and development based out of like a brick and mortar location.
Oh, nice.
And so that went on for a couple of years. Won like the Black Enterprise Elevator Pitch Award and did some different things. And so,
cool.
You know, I'd say if anything else, like that kind of spurred me to do more stuff, was just getting screwed over and just, you know, needing to find opportunities and just kind of going with my gut. You know, I'd have these ideas. I'm not going to, you know, say I, you know, get some kind of inspiration. It's just a lot of times I'll just kind of have a gut feeling and I'll just kind of go with it. And that's where the website shop came from. Mm-hmm. I remember I was sitting on the beach in Savannah drinking a margarita.
Nice.
And I just had this idea, like, what would happen if I put a web design agency inside of a mall?
Wow.
And I didn't have any experience in opening a store. I didn't have any experience in doing it. I just had to go through it. So, I mean, going to the county office and not just applying for a business license, but also having to get an occupational certificate and having mm-hmm. to get blueprints made and floor plans and having to deal with, you know, the power company and having to get employees and then having to figure out that I didn't know anything about taxes.
Yep.
And then
yep.
literally stopping at an accountant's office that I used to pass every day going home, just knocking on the door because I saw they did taxes. And was like, hey, who's in charge? And like the guy came out and I was like, look, I'll pay you $100 if you show me how to use QuickBooks.
Wow. Yeah.
And he was like, you know what? I'll show you how to use it for free. And
wow.
That was how I learned how to do a cash flow statement in P&L.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to grad school at Tech a couple of years ago. I mean, that was, you know, like that was where I learned how to do that stuff. Was I literally stopped at the accounting firm and I still talked to the guy on occasion and was just like, yo, can somebody show me how to do this? Cause I don't know. Mm-hmm. Cause I think I was trying to get like a bank loan. And again, I didn't know anything about getting a bank loan. Mm-hmm. I just went to the bank and was like, I got a business. I'm making money. Will you give me a loan? They were obviously like, no. but in them telling me no, they were asking me for, you know, documentation. So they were like, let me see your P&L. And I was like, what's a P&L? Cause you know, again, going through college, I was on the IT side. So I didn't take a lot of those business and accounting classes. So, I mean, you know, you just have to kind of learn that stuff and figure it out. You know what I mean? I'm not going to romanticize it. It was definitely tough, but you know, at the same time, it wasn't anything that, you know, I don't think anybody couldn't accomplish if they just really got to it. You know, entrepreneurship is an interesting game at that level.
Yeah. But I think that's a real, obviously a real testimony you got there, because I know for a fact I went through something similar. I didn't have your story to draw upon when I went and started my business small with technical solutions. And what I did was I saw a Master P interview on the Breakfast Club. And Master P was talking about what happened when he started his business. He said, his record label, he said, you know, I wanted to get signed and get a deal. So he went to, I think it was Priority Records, and they called him in the room and they said, hey man, we'll sign you for $1 million. And he left. He said, nah, I don't want $1 million. And you know, he was broke, man. And he said that everybody in his family and in his camp was like, what are you doing? He's like, look, man, if they were willing to sign me for $1 million, that means I got to be worth at least 20 million. You know, that's what he was saying. He was like, I know I'm worth more money than that if they're willing to just give me $1 million like that. So what he thought about was, he's like, okay, I need to figure out the business of the record game. So he said he heard that Michael Jackson had the craziest record deal ever in terms of his split with the company that he was signed to. He was getting like, I think 60% of all the profits from his sales or something like that. So he went to, he said, I need to go talk to Michael Jackson's attorney. So he found out who that was. And the attorney was like, nah, man, I can't talk to you unless you bring me the retainer, you know, retainer fee. So the guy, so Master P showed up with $10,000 in cash and walked into the guy's office with a briefcase and was like, can we talk now? And the guy was like, yeah, we can talk. Yeah, we can talk. So, you know, to hear you say that you basically had a similar story of, you had a piece of information you needed to get from somebody about how to do something to execute in your business. And you literally say, hey man, I got $100. Let me talk to you about this. And the guy was so impressed with your initiative and your drive. He was like, nah, man, just come in here. I'll show you how to do it. You know, you know, I think that's why I connected with you on Facebook was, you know, in part because I saw a video that you did where you were just talking about execution. And I think it was on a t-shirt idea about how to create a t-shirt company from scratch and just come up with a design, come up with a concept, how to create an online store to sell it in. And you were just talking about execution, and just how to overcome a lot of the paralysis that we go through as we romanticize our ideas in our head and we say, oh, this is so hard to do and I don't know where to start. You were just like, execute. And I really appreciated that perspective and internalized that. And that's really, I think, what I always try to preach as I teach people and encourage people about being open-minded to being an entrepreneur and to starting hustles and businesses, is that it comes back to execution and solving problems. And a lot of times people say, well, I don't know what to do. Well, that's why we have the internet, and God forbid, that's why we have professionals that you can go talk to who actually do this. So if you, I had an accountant that I have dealings with, and I had to say a very similar story. I called a guy up. I said, hey man, I'm trying to start a business and I need help forming a business. And I was wondering if you could help me with that. He's like, well, you know, I've got a consultation fee of $500. I said, no problem. You take cash. He was like, oh no, I can't take cash, Mr. Smallwood. You know, wink and a nod, right? But I showed up with I didn't have $10,000, but I showed up with my $500. I laid it on his desk and I was like, let's talk, you know? And that's how I got the knowledge I needed for how to create my business, my LLC, and, you know, create an S corp around my business so I can get certain tax advantages. Yada, yada, yada. I learned all of that just the same way, like sitting down with somebody who's a professional and being willing to pay them to get the information that I needed to get the business going. So, I mean, I love that story. That's like, that to me, that's gold. People will hear that and they'll be like, well, you know, it's easy for him. But no, dude, you can do the exact same thing that Brandon and I did. You know, you can go and do the exact same thing.
Yeah, man. I mean, I can't tell you how – I can't over express how unqualified I was to be doing that stuff, you know, like – but you just got to kind of do it, you know, and you just have to kind of get over that stuff and get over those, you know, preoccupations in your own head. I mean, and I still deal with it myself on lots of things, and it's something that I constantly kind of challenge myself and push myself on. But
yeah,
I mean, if you know, and that was, and again, I know this is going to sound crazy, but to me, that was like 10 years ago, man.
Yeah.
Like that was like 2006, 2007, I think, when I had to do that.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, like there's so much more, you know, at fingertips. I don't even think like iPhones are like what just come out. You know what I mean? They've been out like a year or two since then. I mean, there's so much that's happened since then with technology. That if you need the answer to a question, you should definitely. There's no reason why you can't get it.
Yeah.
Information is definitely accessible. That's something my dad's always taught me.
Mm.
I mean, even going back to like just libraries.
Sure.
You know, I spent a lot of time with him going to libraries growing up, and it's the same thing. It's like, if you want to find something, the information is out there.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to go get it.
Yeah. I think that's why I fell in love with learning, man, is because the information would just unlock all of this cool stuff in my life that I was completely ignorant to until I got the information. And, you know, I would see my father, he's a carpenter, but my dad did everything, man. He's a, you know, a jack of all trades when it comes to carpentry. He could do electrician work. He could do plumbing. You know, you could obviously do, you know, building and construction. So he would always sit down in these manuals he had that he got from someplace and look up how to do wiring diagrams for, you know, a particular little job he had to do, or how to, you know, test the current on some particular, on a hot water heater. You know, he was always learning about these different things, solving problems that he came across in his business. And I think that same mindset obviously works, just like you're describing, in entrepreneurship or in business, by just, you know, going to get the information, you know, off the internet. People are out there posting the information. People are out there telling you, hey, this is how you do it. And obviously, if you don't trust it, then go to a professional and pay them, and they'll tell you how to do it. And then if you really want to pay them, then they'll probably do it for you and don't have any problem setting that stuff up, man. You know, so I don't know. I want people, you know, I think entrepreneurship is obviously it isn't a panacea for all issues that relate to wealth and building wealth, but if you're willing to do like you're talking about, having a job, you know, a full-time job, but at the same time working for yourself with the time you have, your spare time, the time that you have available to you, and trying to turn that into something, then I think it is something that can help you build a better life for yourself that you wouldn't imagine. So, you know.
Yeah, man, I promise you there's a lot. You'd be surprised how many people are making it up as they go along, I always tell people.
look at our president, man. That dude is just, he is taking entrepreneurship and he's using it to run the White House. He has no clue what he's doing, and I'm not being political. Exactly. I'm just saying, I'll say this, and we'll transition to, you know, talking about your company, the new company that you started, Pixel Dust. But what I always say is I learned a lot from Donald Trump, and people are like, what? You know, obviously you say that in this political climate, that gets you some weird looks from people, but he really is showing people who are willing to look at his example at how unqualified and how inexperienced you can be, and yet how aspirational and forward thinking you can be about where you're supposed to be in life. He decided one day I can be president of the United States, and he had no qualification for it, still hasn't amassed any qualifications for it, and he went and became president of the United States. And sure, there's a lot of, you know, things that you could say as to what contributed to him doing that, but the key piece internally that I'm interested in terms of his mindset is that he woke up one day completely unqualified, uninhibited, and said, I'm going to become president of the United States, and actually went out there and accomplished it. So You know, that's the part that I'm fascinated about as someone who obviously sets goals. And as an entrepreneur, you have to set goals to accomplish things in your business. I like to set those crazy, lofty goals, because if Donald Trump can set the craziest and loftiest of goals of becoming president of the United States, then why can't I say that, hey, I want to have 100 customers using my particular service, or have 1,000 downloads consistently per month, per episode, or something like that for my podcast? Like, those are goals to me that seem lofty, but at the same time, why can't I execute on those things? You know, if somebody can, like Donald Trump, can run and become president, so.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. There's no reason to answer your question. You know what I'm saying? No reason why you can't do those things. It's just, like you say, you just got to do them.
Yeah.
That's all it comes down to. You know, people just got to do them, and that's all that people have to understand. And, you know, I think I gave like probably a really bad motivational speech one time to some folks, but that's what I kind of told them. I was like, you know, to be totally honest, in my experience, most people won't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it.
You know, so,
that's it.
So, I mean, like, the reality is, like, even if you just do something, you're probably doing more than most people. So just keep doing something, you know, and you'll end up like a lot further ahead.
Yeah.
Whether you know what you're doing or not.
No, that's really it, man. If you, there's so much power in doing that people just don't understand, that if you don't do, then nothing will come up. Nothing will happen from you not doing. You know, it takes agency to accomplish things. You have to actually execute and do something. Even if it's, even if you make progress in the wrong direction for a bit, you're at least moving, so you can turn around and head back. You're used to moving at that point. You've accomplished, you know what it feels like to be in motion. You may not even be headed in the right direction, but at least you have the experience of knowing what it's like to be moving and not being stagnant and stationary in whatever you're trying to accomplish. So, yeah, I agree with that. Most people don't do. And when you do manage to do, then that creates opportunities for you that you wouldn't imagine. So, but
absolutely.
So, yeah, man, all of that great stuff leads us to Pixel Dust. Pixel Dust is an idea that you came up with that caught my eye and caught my ear. So tell me and my audience, Brandon, what Pixel Dust is.
Yeah, well, Pixel Dust is a service that actually is inspired by something that I read. I'll get into that. But, like, it is kind of an extension, too, of the website shop. What we are is we're a service that provides basically premium website support.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times people get websites built specifically using content management systems like WordPress and Squarespace.
Sure.
And, you know, while it might be easy to get those sites built or even try to build it yourself, sometimes you just need help.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are looking to kind of fill that gap for people that need that extra bit of help. You know, sometimes people's web designers and developers disappear.
Yep.
Or become unavailable, and they don't have anybody to kind of turn to. So, you know, that's something that we've experienced, or I've experienced kind of over the years, and just building websites and projects for people, and just saw the opportunity to kind of productize the service. And so we specifically focus on WordPress and Squarespace sites and provide, you know, unlimited monthly support tasks for a flat monthly fee.
Nice, nice. And, I mean, what you're describing is so true. I had a conversation with a customer, a potential customer of Smallwood Technical Solutions, and she was in a similar situation that you're describing. She began a project, a web-based project, and needless to say, this relationship between her and the contractor that she was using went south. And she came to me saying, hey, can I help, one, salvage the product and the project, and can I help bring it across the goal line? And, you know, it's a real thing that happens when you've got, you know, lay people in, as it relates to technology, who need some technology to execute on their business. And then they just get either get the project completed and then realize that, hey, this isn't exactly what I need, or something goes wrong with the project, but there's no one there to support them. And they don't really want to go through the whole hassle of engaging a full blown, you know, technical, you know, solution provider, like myself. But at the same time, they want to just, you know, maybe they just want to change the font on the homepage of their website, you know, and they don't know how to do it. So you guys come in at Pixel Dust and you provide an opportunity to, you know, give the customer access to help that is, you know, that scales at based on their need. So, you know, based on what you described, I can be a customer who has a website that's already existing on those platforms, WordPress and Squarespace. And if I need support and help with it, you guys will give me unlimited support for a flat fee, which is really awesome. I think that's a very attractive proposition to a lot of small business owners and people who have those types of websites.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, we just want to be, you know, accessible and affordable. Like I said, kind of fill that gap. You know, we've gotten asked a lot, do you all build websites?
Sure.
Not at this time, no, we don't.
Okay.
I mean, we could, but we don't. We have people that we partner with that we can kind of farm that work out to. But we right now, we're really just trying to focus on providing kind of the best overall premium website support experience really for, you know, solopreneurs and kind of small businesses.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for the people who are listening to this episode and they're hearing us talk about entrepreneurship and just sort of developing ideas, I like how you said Pixel Dust sort of arose from your experience with the web shop, where you could walk into a store, a brick and mortar institution, and get help building a website or working on a website. And you're already familiar with some of the challenges and some of the opportunities of that model. And you're like, well, I can evolve that given this new space that we live in with technology, where you've got, you know, WordPress sites and Squarespace powered sites. And you're like, well, I can take some of those lessons from my previous venture that I did, and I can use those lessons obviously in tackling this new opportunity that you believe the market presents. So, you know, for people who are listening, I want them to take out that nugget of wisdom there, is that you are also executing on a business where you've got some familiarity with what it is that you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely. And people reach out to me all the time and they, you know, say, Brandon, I got this idea for this business or that. And I mean, look, I think anything is possible.
Sure.
you can get lucky, like anything is possible. But if you have the luxury of kind of seeing an opportunity and just have like some unique experience, something that kind of uniquely kind of positions you to be successful.
Yeah.
I think those are always kind of, that's always kind of the part of the winning formula to have a successful business idea.
Yeah, definitely. Some of the best business advice I got, what happened to me when I had my first job, where I was on somebody's payroll and I worked at a grocery store. And when you're working in a small business, you can either focus in on doing the work that you're there to do as an employee, or you can also try and learn from the people you're working for if they're willing to provide you some level of mentorship. And I had that with those guys that I worked for at that grocery store. The grocery store was called Superfood Champ. Shameless plug. Actually, started off being Food Champ, and then they rebranded themselves as Superfood Champ. And I never forget, my dad, he did work helping them build out the store in some different ways. And I got a job eventually there as a bag boy. And I never forget, the guy's name is Gary. Gary told me, he was the owner of the store. And I was, you know, telling him, you know, talking crazy one day. I was like, yeah, man, one day I'm going to be, you know, in business for myself and I'm going to do things. And he was like, you know, before you just start your own business, he's like, you should go and work for somebody in that business so that you can learn the business and see how the business is executed and done, so that when you do start your own business, you'll have the knowledge of how to be successful. Because a lot of times that's all that is keeping a lot of businesses from being successful, is that people are just trying to execute on stuff that they really don't know about. And not only are they paying the tax in starting the business of dealing with entering the market, which is a whole different conversation and topic to itself, but they're also dealing with the fact that they just don't know what they need to know in order to be successful at their business. So I think that's a great piece of wisdom that I obviously got exposed to, and you're also elaborating on as well with your experience with Pixel Dust that you're starting. So, you know, it's just so much we could talk about there, man. It's just, you got to get the information. Information is the key to starting so many things in life and being successful. So,
yeah, man. I mean, you've got to do it. And then, like I say, you're absolutely right. If you can get the opportunity to kind of work with somebody and figure that stuff out, like I say, it's kind of like free on the job training.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I have a couple of things that I'm working on that, you know, to be totally honest, aren't within my skill, my frame of experience.
Sure.
To reference some other kind of business ideas. And yeah, it's tough because you don't know what you don't know. But one of the things that I do is I reach out to people that are experts in that business.
Yeah.
And I do it regularly. And when I run across them, I have conversations with them. And it's funny because sometimes, you know, like with some folks, I'm like, look, I'll pay you. Or sometimes if I even like and just bump into somebody like at the coffee shop, and you know, I'll start asking them questions and they'll be like, man, you should know a lot about this. And I'm like, oh yeah, you know, it's just a hobby. But you know, you just have to get that you have to get that inside information if you want to, you know, or else, man. I mean, I think somebody told me one time, you know, like not knowing is expensive.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
You know, like not knowing is expensive, man.
That's it. That's it. You know, I think we're going to obviously wrap up our conversation there, man. And I just want to share one story with my listeners that reminds me of what you said about what kind of gave you the inspiration for being entrepreneurs. You said it came from getting screwed over. I never forget what put that spark in me is the same. You know, I've seen this twice in my life, so I'll share this. So the grocery store guy, my friend Gary back home, he sold his grocery store for like $1 million, right? That's the rumor on the street. He sold it for like $1 million, right? And it was like a 10-year payout for him of like $100,000. That was the whole, that's the nature of the transaction. So he's going to get paid $100,000 a year for the next 10 years for his business. And I never forget when he sold the store, I saw how happy he was. I saw this look on his face. He was so happy, man. And
I bet he was.
Yeah. He was just happy, man. He was like, yeah, he assured me. He's like, man, I'm gonna pay you because it was, you know, there was some transition going on. So he owed basically the last payroll or whatever. And he was like, man, I'm gonna take care of you. I'm gonna pay you. But I saw how he was just free. You know, I mean, he got that opportunity. He was just so free. And then I saw when I was my first job in Atlanta, 2006, 2007, right? I worked for a logistics company in Norcross, and the company was sold. And similar experience to what you had, I got called into the boardroom, and they had everybody standing around in the boardroom. Because the boardroom was, they would call these boardroom meetings whenever something bad happened or something big happened, right? And it got to the point where we just dreaded going to the boardroom. They said, everybody in the boardroom, we were like, oh, what, you know, who died now? You know, because that actually happened. One of my friends died from cancer, and they called us into the boardroom to tell us that she died from cancer. You know, it was just, I mean, it was just like, yeah, it was a dreaded experience going into the boardroom. But I remember that day, the owner of the company was in the boardroom. He had the biggest smile on his face. He had his feet kicked up on the boardroom table, and he was sitting there twiddling his thumbs while the new owners of the company, the firm that had bought our company, was there, and they had some representation there. And they were standing around the boardroom, you know, telling us that the company had been sold and that, you know, things were changing, and this is who the owners were, and this is kind of what the leadership structure looked like now going forward, yada, yada, you know, all that stuff, right? And someone said, so, man, I wish I could remember his name, but somebody asked the old owner, he's like, hey, man, so what are you going to be doing? He's like, just twirling his thumbs, happy. You could see just like that, you know, that pile of cash that he had just gotten. It was all over him, right? And he was like, you know, I don't know, man. I'll just do some things and, you know, a few adventures. I'll stay busy, but we'll see. I don't know right now. And I said to myself, Brandon, no lie, man. I said, I want that one day. I want that experience of being the guy who sold something and saw it, you know, who birthed it, who created it, who worked and grinded on executing the idea and got it to the point where somebody else came along and bought it. And that's the exit. I want the exit, right? And I just never forget those two exits. And I saw that and I'm like, man, that's like, that's amazing. And it really helped shape me in terms of being entrepreneurial and thinking about how to create things and you know, obviously go hard at it, you know, and try to create something. So, you know, it's just about that, man, that experience of seeing certain things at the right time that changes how you see things. Because, you know, maybe, you know, for another day, we'll have to get together when you've got more free time and talk about business in general and share some more experiences with people. Because I think I want to really empower people with the podcast. And I don't think people sometimes get it that, you know, of what the world really consists of in terms of our employment and how we should really see ourselves versus how we've sort of bought into these myths about employment, you know. But that's another podcast for another day. So, you know, Brandon, how can people get in touch with you on social media and find out more about Pixel Dust and what you guys got going on with your new company and your new venture?
Yeah, man. I mean, the best place to follow us is just go to the website, man, Pixel Dust. pixeldust.co. So pixeldust.co, not .com, but .co. And check us out on all the social media platforms. Everybody can find me, Brandon Butler, on Facebook. Just look me up if you have a question or anything. You want to hit me up directly. But, yeah, man, just check it out. And I appreciate the support and, you know, hope we can help some people out.
Definitely. And we will link to pixeldust.co in the show notes as well so that people can have it easy to find. And I'll also link to your Facebook profile in the show notes as well so people can just click and find you easy on the web. Brandon, once again, man, thank you for being part of the conversation.
Oh, man, thank you so much for having me, James. I really appreciate it, man.
And that brings us to the end of Culture and Conversations. Thank you, Brandon Butler from Pixel Dust. And you can go visit pixeldust.co to see Brandon's work on this great service that he's offering to Squarespace and WordPress site users. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for subscribing. And thank you guys for sharing this content. If you want to stay in touch with the show on social media, you can do so. Culture and Conversations is the Facebook page. Culture and Conversations is the Instagram page. And cultureandconversations@gmail.com is the email address. Thank you guys for your love and support of the show. Thank you guys for being part of the show if you're listening to this interview as an interviewee. And just thank you guys for being supportive of what I'm trying to do by sharing this great content from my life and from my friends and from people I know with you guys. And if you don't mind, go to iTunes and write me a review. I'll appreciate that very much. 5 stars is what we need. It tells people that this show is worth listening to. If you have an opportunity, go to social media and also on Facebook, write me a review, letting people know that this is a great podcast. And if nothing else, just continue to share and encourage me. It really helps make this show possible. So with that said, guys, I nailed another intro and outro in one take on Culture and Conversations. Stay part of the conversation, people. Peace.